Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
It's time for Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. Kurt Hoag, he's on the other line. That's the Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We are talking about it. Not a great week of Brewers baseball. 3-4 against the Washington Nationals and the Pittsburgh Pirates. This was supposed to be where things got a little bit easier, but the Brewers offense continued to struggle. We are now post-trade deadline. They made some moves, but we're still not really seeing the results on offense. Sunday, by far the most frustrating example. I shouldn't even say by far the most frustrating, because there was a really bad game on Wednesday that they lost in Washington in walk-off fashion. But a 4-1 loss on Sunday, kind of capping off this losing week. At the end of this conversation, by the way, I spoke to one of the newest additions to the Milwaukee Brewers, Mark Canha, who was acquired at the trade deadline from the New York Mets. Sat down with him and chatted with him. So that'll be something you can listen to at the end. But right now, Kurt, we will talk about these trade deadline acquisitions, because I think you might have some thoughts. We'll start maybe in a happy place with Sunday's game, not because the outcome was a good one, but because Brandon Woodruff was back on the mound, the Brewers co-ace, I think you can safely say, is back, made his third start of the year. He threw five innings, got through it, and I think it was about 85 pitches, which seemed like kind of about the ballpark where you expected him to go, and he looked very good. He struck out a plethora of Pittsburgh Pirates. He did give up a couple home runs, neither of which was I think, a booming shot. One I can't even believe got over the wall, and so he ends up taking the loss because the offense doesn't support him, but that's good news, right? Having Brandon Woodruff back, of course, is good news. You were there on Sunday, so what did you see? What did he say afterwards? I imagine people are feeling pretty good about at least that part of it for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Yeah, big picture, it's a good day. Big picture, it's probably a good week as well, aside from the very bad record. But the fact that Brandon Woodruff is back was something that I guess we kind of assumed it would happen at some point. But, I mean, it's been 4 months without a top 10 pitcher, starting pitcher in the National League. I feel like that can pretty safely say top 10 pitcher. So that's huge addition for this ball club. In the smaller picture, JR, they can't score runs consistently enough, well enough. They don't have enough good hitters. The good hitters they do have historically have not been good. So that mars it for sure a little bit, like the immediate reminder of, Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns and all these guys, we can get into this more, pitch well, and it doesn't really matter some nights. My mind goes back to three starts ago, Corbin Burns, after he went six innings, two runs in a loss, said something along the lines of, if I make that start 9 out of 10 times, we're going to win. And then they lost the next game when he went six innings and gave up two runs. And then last night he gave up two runs over six innings again. And guess what? They did not lose, but they almost did. They were within two outs of losing, and they won that game by a run. So my point here being, you got to score some runs.
Yeah, they finally busted out the bats on Thursday to score 14 runs against the Pittsburgh Pirates. That was great. It was a great night, 14-1, total blowout. But the inconsistency is what's killing them. And when I say inconsistency, of course they're not going to score double-digit runs every night. But you'd like to think that they can get four runs up there for their two best pitchers, Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff. Like you said, you throw those guys out against the Pittsburgh Pirates, one of the lesser teams in the National League. You got to win both those games, and I realize that's not how it's going to work every time out, but it's happening enough where Corbin Burns starts aren't getting you to the finish line. You still have to score runs or get a good performance from the bullpen to worm out of that game. And Brandon Woodruff now is the latest example one run on Sunday. Yeah, they scored three runs on Saturday and one in really thrilling walk-off fashion, but one of those runs is only scoring because it was the automatic runner at second base in extra innings. And, I mean, that was a great win. It was uplifting. They tied it in the ninth on a Sal Frelick single, won it on Blake Perkins. It was good. It was still just not enough from the offense. The night before, yeah, four runs, not the end of the world, except they had bases loaded, nobody out, and a 3-0 count and didn't score in that inning and won a multiple innings in which they had runners stranded in scoring position. You're just seeing over and over wasted opportunities, and sometimes in many cases just no opportunities being generated at all. It's still Christian Yelich, who I think is miniature mini slump here this week, so like you can't rely on
him. He's cool.
Yeah,
he's cool.
He's cooled. And William Contreras had a really good run there too, but like you cannot rely on these two guys. And I think what's concerning is that not that the trade deadline you necessarily expected them to go get that one bat who could change everything. I think even maybe a little controversial about whether or not this was a good trade deadline or not. Fangraphs thinks it's great. Other people, you know, maybe not as impressed, but you don't see really many people thinking it's less than like B+, B- work. I mean, it's fine, but and I don't even know if there were other guys who moved that the Brewers could have gotten. Like, it doesn't seem like there were a ton of bats that were on the move anyway. But we're past the trade deadline now, and they're still in the same muck that they've been in all year long. And you kind of thought of that as maybe a pivot point where they could figure it out. But here we are, first week after the trade deadline. It's the exact same place that they have been, and that they don't have enough offense. The only reason they are a playoff team today is because there are a lot of teams that are bad around them. And San Francisco Giants, one of the teams ahead of them, has a worse offense than the Brewers. So it's absolutely plausible they still go to the playoffs. And at the same time, this team is just so flawed, particularly on offense. I wonder, Kurt, like what else is there? Is it just like, okay, you've played all your cards, now you just have to hope that they fly at this point, that you hope that Willy Adames figures it out, that Rowdy Tellez gets healthy. Maybe they can bring up a Tyler Black. Obviously, we've talked about Hira a ton, but are there moves they can still make to fortify this offense? Or is there anything you see that can change the tide? Or is this just going to be a team that scores three runs a game for the final 2 months of the season?
Well, first off, don't ask me questions that I can answer Keston here too.
I know.
You don't want that world on this podcast.
I cannot believe he is still in the organization. He was not traded and he's not on the big league team. I don't get it, Kurt. Do we even want to go down this road? Should we go down this road?
No, I don't. I don't. I am telling myself in my head, don't go down this road again. Don't go down this road again, because I've said everything I'm going to say about it. And if he's here, he's here. If he's not, he's not. The organization has deemed there are better players,
yeah,
in terms of total value than him. And not saying that that's correct, or not saying it's either wrong either, but that's just how it's probably going to be, unless like three more guys get hurt between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, I mean, getting Canna really sort of rules him out, right? Because you could see a situation
Yeah, Canna's going to get a lot of DH at-bats as a right-handed hitter, for sure. My concern with the offense, in addition to it just being bad, is this. It's those situational moments you've talked about, and I guess maybe not only just the situational moments, but those are where it's exacerbated and it really stands out, is the poor approach. I don't know what that stems from, and like hitting is very hard, and so putting together good at bats is, you know, really it's a hard thing to do. But you just think about the times where guys are ahead in counts and they swing out of the zone. Not a lot of discipline on breaking stuff. Like, I'm not even talking like get the guy in. I'm just like it's just the nitty gritty of the at bat oftentimes is not pretty. When they're getting their pitch, they're not driving it. So, and that's happening with a lot of guys in the lineup right now. And that is something that needs to get overhauled over the last 2 months. Like, this offense has been bad for 4 months. That's kind of who they are. It's not like there's suddenly a bunch of, there are new faces, but there's not a bunch of like new revitalizing faces, I would say. Like, the guys that got are league average hitters. Like, there just aren't the ceiling lifters in there right now. But then again, you're asking for like four runs a game when Corbin Burns and Brandon Woodruff pitching. So that should be possible with the lineup they have.
Yeah. The Brewers are a game and a half in first place.
But that's right.
We often neglect to focus on the big picture, but it's honestly
what are the Reds doing? Oh no.
The Reds are having a very bad time.
Now that is a team where they needed to fortify something and they said, I'm good.
Well, they're in an interesting position because so much of what they've gotten has come from their young players. And in a way, that's true for the Brewers, too. But primarily on defense, you know, with the Reds, you're not, you know, you're relying on guys to continually get better. Ellie De La Cruz is a really good example of that. I mean, he had obviously a very flashy start, but he's gone, you know, backwards quite a bit. Like, the league has figured him out a little bit. And if they're committed to Ellie De La Cruz, you're not bringing in a shortstop, third baseman, or whatever. If you know, Spencer Steer is going to have to get better. Matt McClain has got to continue getting better. It's Jake Fraley and TJ Friedl. Like, they have the guys, but now Fraley's on the injured list. Their pitching is still in shambles. You just kind of had to figure it would catch up with them a little bit. And now here come the Chicago Cubs. They won 2 of 3 against Atlanta over the weekend. They are riding. They're absolutely bonkers right now. I think they've won 13 out of 16. They did go get a bat in Jamer Candelario. I don't, like, this isn't like a earth-shattering trade acquisition, but it is probably the biggest bat who changed hands at the deadline, I think. So the Cubs are feeling it right now, and Cody Bellinger is on an absolute another level. They haven't even necessarily gotten it out of their stud pitchers in Justin Steele and Marcus Stroman, but they are figuring it out. Stroman's now injured as well, but they're figuring it out. Great bullpen work. And the Cubs are now tied with the Reds in terms of games out. They have a little bit different records. The Cubs technically would have a playoff spot, would have that last wild card spot right now, a game and a half behind the Brewers and tied with the Reds. I need your thoughts on this race here because it's still a bunch of flawed teams. I know the Cubs are playing really lights out. I'm not terrified of them, but obviously they're the team to watch right now, just as the Reds were maybe at this time last month. So as you look at the race, you see these three teams at the top. What are you thinking? Because whether or not we think the Brewers are deeply flawed and troubled offensively, like, the bottom line is they're still a first place team, and that means they're in the mix here because it's the second week of August now. So what are you seeing in this three horse race now? And who would you put your money on, Kurt?
Yeah. So my thoughts are threefold. Number one, I just pulled up I had my minor league app open. Tyler Black walked again. He's at AAA. We can get to that later.
Yeah.
Well, Keston Hira homered. That's the meat of what I want to get to here. Keston Hira just hit another homer. JR.
Keston Hira is not coming up, Kurt. It's just not happening. I know. Tyler Black is going to come up, I think. That's something we do have to talk about.
I just need to have the record set for next year if Keston Hira has a 800 OPS somewhere else. I have to make my claims known.
Yeah.
The rest of my thoughts on that, the question that you posed to me, not the Keston Hira one, is within the division. I mean, we look within the division. The Cubs are also a flawed team. Like, their pitching's not great. Their bullpen's, I think, it's fine now, but a lot of it is hanging on pins and needles. Maybe a little smoke and mirrors there as well. So they're not going to play this well forever. That's for sure. The Reds are not going to play this poorly forever. Like, we saw them for 2+ months when they were playing anyone but the Brewers. They were like the best team in baseball. They're also not that good.
Can't have the series they just had against the Nationals. That's on par with what the Brewers have done with some of these lesser teams.
The vibes certainly are worse If you thought it was a rough week for the Brewers, hoo boy.
Yeah.
The Reds had a disastrous, calamitous week. But I'm sure at some point they'll sort of figure it out again. And this will be a pretty close race between three teams, none of whom seems to be good enough to fully pull away. So that'll be interesting to watch. But the other thing to watch here is within the wild card, there's room for two teams from this division to make it in the playoffs. Especially because the Marlins are frauds.
They're bad.
They have collapsed. And I think they're still even ahead of the Diamondbacks, I just looked up and the Diamondbacks were out of a playoff spot they were leading the division a few weeks ago.
Yeah, two of the best stories were the Marlins and the Diamondbacks through the first half of the season, and it is just bottoms falling out there.
Yeah, very bad there. So I mean, they'll probably turn around at some point, but like, things are going so poorly there. I'm not entirely sure how much they can turn it around. So there's multiple avenues for the Brewers to sneak into the playoffs this year. And even if you don't win the division, then there's that sixth seed. If you win the division, then you'll honestly probably be playing a division rival in that first round with the way it's shaping up right now, or at least the way I think it's going to shape up in the end.
Yeah, to put a finer point on this, the Giants, Diamondbacks, Phillies, and then either the Reds or the Brewers, who have the second place team in the NL Central, is have all been kind of competing for three spots, four teams for three spots in the wild card. Now we've introduced some new contenders because the Cubs are, like we said, they're back in the mix, so they have to be considered as well. The Padres are not far out. They're only a couple games out as well. And we know that the Padres have a ton of talent. For as miserable as their season has been, they're still pretty good. So there is a lot of shifting, and nobody is taking the reins. Nobody is playing really, really well among those teams right now. The Giants are probably playing the best, but they have no offense. They're winning games 2-1, like they're doing what the Brewers have to do. So it definitely feels like there are spots ripe for the picking. Arizona, I think, is pretty talented, but they've just kind of backslid a little bit. They maybe haven't gotten quite the Cy Young level from Zach Gallen, but you know, other starters as well. Merrill Kelly had been hurt. He's back now, but they don't maybe have other guys.
Their bullpen is buns.
Their bullpen
It
is
is
truly bad.
buns.
Yeah. I mean, they tried by adding Paul Sewald from the Mariners, their closer.
Oops.
He ended up blowing a save against the Twins on Sunday. So like they're in the muck. The Marlins have a very good bullpen, but their starters are just okay. Sandy Alcantara is kind of refining his form a little bit in the last few starts, but their offense is nothing to write home about. They're not crushing the ball over the park. So they are in a huge, huge funk. And the Phillies are actually probably of those teams, the team that's playing the least offensively. But they have not really hit a groove at any point this season either. And the Brewers right now have a 2-1 series lead on them, which could come up later in tiebreaker scenarios. But anyway, all of this is to say is, like you said, the Brewers have a lot of ways into the postseason right now, and kind of they just need to get hot for, like, that's the thing, is like, as bad as all of these teams are, they're all bad. I agree with you. None of them are a true cut playoff team. But all it's going to take is one of them to get on a 2-week bender like the Cubs are on right now, like the Brewers did when they went on the road to, you know, Cleveland, New York, and Pittsburgh, and they had such a great road trip. All it's going to take is like one of those to really get a foothold. So it doesn't matter to me that all these teams are bad. Really, just one of them has to be good for a little while, and they're probably going to rise up into the playoff threshold. So you look at the Brewers and you think, well, the schedule is kind of favorable. Like, there's opportunities for that. But then, you know, that was what Washington and Pittsburgh were supposed to be, and they lost more than they won, you know. And it comes down to that 2-1 game, I think, in Washington, where they ended up blowing it on just a series of ridiculously weird events and losing in walk-off fashion. Obviously, it could teeter either way. You know, that's a 4-3 week if they end up holding on to that win. So I'm babbling, and I don't even know if I have a point. The point is, the Brewers maybe aren't good, but, you know, it just doesn't take much. And they're in a position where we've seen that they can do that. They can get hot for 10 days, and that's going to be a huge boost if they can ever get there, Kurt.
If they can get there, for sure. I wrote about it this week. This is a part of the schedule to do it. And they're 3-4 through half of it. There's still half of it left to get hot. Last year, around this time, it was maybe a little early in the season, I predicted a sweep over the Rockies at home. And it
And?
happened. It
Yeah.
happened. Oh, no, it didn't happen. They lost the final. It was a four gamer.
Oh.
They won 3 out of 4. It was like, it, but that was a stretch where they won like 9 of 10 or something. So it counts. I don't have it in me to predict it here. I don't know exactly why. Maybe it's the taste of being in. This team got swept by the Rockies. In May, I was
In
there. It
Oakland.
happened. I watched it. They got swept by Oakland. Like, I cannot believe this team got swept by the Rockies earlier this year. That was like the one stretch where the Rockies were playing decent baseball. But also, no, you cannot just like credit the Rockies away for that sweep. The Brewers got swept in Colorado. That's bad.
Yeah.
They'll take the series, though. They'll take the series.
So Kurt's calling 2-3 against the Rockies. After that, they go to Chicago to
Two
face
to
the White
three.
Sox. White Sox are also bad. I mean, they should easily win that series. You know, like, when you get down granularly, you could say 2-3 could go either way. I mean, it's not like you can predict. And it's cherry picking a little bit to
No,
say
they're going to sweep. They're going to sweep. They're going to sweep.
they're going to
Yeah.
sweep which, the Rockies or the White
I
Sox?
have thought about the Rockies for more than half a
Okay,
second.
okay, okay.
And they're going to sweep those
It's
guys.
cherry picking to say, well, look at the record against the Rockies, Nationals, and the Athletics,
A's.
and say that they
But
have one win in nine tries.
Those are three of what, the five worst teams in baseball. You could throw the Tigers in there too. The Tigers.
They lost two of three against the Tigers. I mean, at some point,
Tigers are better, but
they are. But now it's at some point you got to say like a good team has to do a little bit better than that, right? And when you're starting to look at all these, now they swept the Royals. They went three and oh against the Royals. So I guess you have to say that as well. But at some point you have to hammer these teams, and they've done very well against the Pirates coming into this series. So it's not really a Pirates thing, but still, you're supposed to be a team that's competing for the playoffs, man. Like you can't let those opportunities just like worm by. I think the way the balanced schedule is, I think they might end up being the only team in baseball this year that does not have a win against the Oakland Athletics.
That'd be a good thing to put on your ledger.
I mean, it's a silly stat because there's lots of teams that play three games. I mean, yeah, I probably say that about a few teams.
Baseball is indeed quite silly. But you can make the play. You could go 0-15 against the Rockies and whoever and still make the playoffs. You just make it significantly more difficult on yourself when the rest of the league is, you know, picking up 9-10 wins or whatever in those games. Luckily for the Brewers, the Reds have been the team they've beat up on. Like they've played well against the Pirates as well, but comes to mind is the Reds and the Mets. Those are the two teams that they've made their hay against.
That's true.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, all wins count. It's also why, like, I usually have a tough time looking too far ahead at, like, the schedule, whether for, you know, a tough schedule or an easy schedule, and, like, assuming it's going to be a good or a bad, like, couple of weeks. Because the Brewers got through that post-deadline gauntlet, and until the Atlanta implosion, we're playing really well. And now they're in this schedule or part of the schedule where you look at it and you would say, oh, they should crush these teams. And they, JR, are not crushing these baseball teams.
No.
So, yeah, schedule doesn't really matter, I guess. Just got to win enough games.
Lost, six of their last 10? Is that what we're going with? Yeah, that'd be about right.
I have no idea, but it feels worse than that.
Yes, it's right. 7 of their last 10 because they did get 2 games against Pittsburgh, once against Washington. That crazy walk-off on that afternoon game in Washington, that one really, really smarts on Wednesday because Devin Williams came in and he gave up a ball through the wickets of Carlos Santana at first base. You know, the defense is part of the package with him. And then a bloopy-looking single. It wasn't a bloop, but it was definitely a weird swing. He walks a guy, and then a throwing error from his third baseman. Again, defense is how this team is built right now, and their defense lets them down, and they end up losing a game that they absolutely should have won. And again, no offense. You can't score 2 runs against the Washington Nationals. You have to score more than that. And they put themselves in a really tight position that has been a place where they are all year. Let's talk a little bit more about Carlos Santana. A couple things I still want to hit on before we get to 3 up, 3 down. Carlos Santana is obviously one of the new acquisitions. I did talk about him a little bit with Todd Rosiak on last week's episode of Microbrew. This week, the new additions coming early in the week. That's Mark Canha and relief pitcher Andrew Chafin, formerly of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Kind of an interesting location for him to be coming from, since the Diamondbacks are ostensibly in the same race that the Brewers are. So they upgrade where they have to. Mark Canha, an outfielder. They needed an outfielder. Carlos Santana, power-hitting, theoretically, first baseman. They needed a first baseman upgrade, and then they get a left-handed reliever. So they addressed what they needed to address. They did get objectively better, because even if you say that none of these guys are difference makers per se, they are better than what the Brewers were deficient in some of those areas, to the point that they absolutely, even modest upgrades are upgrades. And I'd mentioned that before, the Atlanta Braves method of 2021, you know, just get guys that might be good, upgrade in a few areas and then see if maybe they go way above and beyond. I don't think that's going to happen here, but what is your thought on these acquisitions? Do you think there is a market improvement enough that they didn't really give up a lot? So I don't know if I feel like there's, you know, like doing nothing would not have been as good as what they did. But what are you thinking as you look at what they did at the trade deadline?
Yeah. Oh boy. Oh man. I have agony in my voice because I'm not sure. Yes. That's my cop out here, but I'm not sure. They had to do something, right? The offense is not good, but it, as previously constructed, was worse. They upgraded from having the worst first baseman in the league offensively to having a league average first baseman offensively in Carlos Santana. Although for reasons that I'm like nerdy, more nerdy reasons I'm not really going to get into here. I don't really expect him to be anything more than that, if he is that, in his time in Milwaukee.
I'll quickly talk about the nerdy reasons why I'm suspect. His barrel rate was really low. He is not making solid contact. He was not this year. It seems he is in decline, you know?
Yeah, that's it's an aging slugger who has not been good really for 3 years now. And a lot of those stats seem like barrel rates, hard contact, even like the swing decisions are so good, but they're not as elite as they used to be. So anyway, still better than what they've had at first base now that we've rained on the parade. Mark Canna, I guess, doesn't really move the needle for me. Like, it doesn't upgrade your team defensively. I think if you're taking at bats away from Joey Weimer in center field, sure, it might upgrade your team on offense for sure. Although Canna's been another league average bat, maybe there's some more in there as well, but not a ton of pop. So it just doesn't, like I said, move the needle a ton for me. I like that it gives them more options and more depth. That for sure is a big thing. You can kind of sort of play a little more of the hot hand, which I don't know if they've been, maybe they've been doing that a little bit. There haven't been many hot hands.
No.
So
yeah, I think they've been playing that.
The Chapin trade for sure. I think that's a positive. In my mind, the bullpen needed another guy, a lefty there certainly doesn't hurt. If you make the playoffs, I think that'll be even more important to have him. But I think they had to make kind of the moves that they made. Like, they needed a first baseman. There were not a ton of first basemen available. CJ Krohn doesn't do it for me. The Mariners didn't move their guys. The Angels decided not to sell. The Red Sox didn't sell, and now they're not playing great either. So, there were not a ton of options. They had to do something. Carl Santana fits as something. It's an upgrade. Considering how, their first baseman that they have probably were on pace for maybe even a negative war rest of the year. Honestly, that's probably what it would be. And then over 2 months, maybe get a win out of Carlos Santana, you hope. So that's on paper, that is good. For some reason, it just doesn't inspire a ton of confidence or excitement in me personally. But maybe in other people it does. And that's the beauty of the game. You can get excited about things that some other people don't.
Brewers made a couple minor trades as well, although one involving their opening day third baseman, Luis Urias, traded to Boston for a relief pitcher, or a right-handed pitcher named Bradley Blaylock, who slots right into their top 15 in their minor league system, according to MLB.com. He's right at number 15. Luis Urias really struggling, had the injury, wasn't really able to get back on track. So what that move does, though, is it basically declares that our starting third baseman is Andrew Monasterio. Now, Brian Anderson was there a little bit over the weekend, coming back from his injury. But Monasterio is the guy that the dust has settled, and he's the guy who's out there the vast majority of the time at third base. That's interesting. I mean, he's not a prototypical corner infielder because he doesn't have a lot of power. He has no power. He's got one home run this year. But he is a guy who has made some great defensive plays, made another one on Sunday. I don't know what to make of that. That feels like an area that could still stand to be upgraded, but I don't want to shortchange what Andrew Monasterio has done this year, which is be pretty productive. He's had really good numbers this year. He has earned his playing time. So where do you stand on third base? Do you feel like that's settling for something? I don't know if there are better options. I think that's just kind of where they're at right now. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I was surprised. Not in that they got rid of Urias so much. I think the writing was on the wall probably for this to be his last year. I just don't think they were going to pay the money for his arbitration. With the year ahead. But I was a bit surprised that they didn't at least try another go round with him. Now, we've talked about the roster with that spot, there's not a ton of flexibility, although I guess you could have him up over Blake Perkins maybe at some point. Which is a debate we really don't need to have here right now. But I just thought he was kind of getting going a little bit at AAA, and there's enough of a track record in there. And JR, we have seen this organization this year especially when they have players with whom they have somewhat of a track record, buddy, those players get a lot. They get some leash. They get a lot of leeway.
Yes.
Sometimes even if they don't have that great of a track record, like, I don't know. I just thought there was enough that maybe, like, with the injury and the slow start and all that, like, maybe it would, they could just give them another crack at it this year. I'm not saying, like, I think they should have. I was just surprised that they sort of cut bait with him during the middle of the season. I'm sure this, you know, the pitcher they got back is an arm they like. And, like, there's still a good chance Urias turns into a really good player and can still be, you know, like the player he was in 2021 in this league. He's young. A lot of the athleticism seemed to have gone away, honestly, and that's a concern. But, like you said, he's young. He's been good. And hopefully he gets it going with the Red Sox. And because he's a likable kid here for sure.
Yeah. Let's talk about Willy Adames. One of the big reasons this offense is
I think the biggest reason, yes.
You're right. For two reasons. One is they have relied on Willy providing uncommon amount of offense coming from the shortstop position, and that has enabled them to not build a roster where you have mashers necessarily at the corner infield spots. You know, they haven't had mashers there, but Willy Adames has been so productive. You know, even last year when he had like a 238 average and, you know, it wasn't great, but he still hit 31 bombs, you know. And even this year, he has 17 of them. So it's not like he's doing nothing. He's providing some power, but he is way below average this year offensively. And I think he's been really bad in the first week of August. And I think that's manifested itself in some really uncompetitive at-bats. Sunday really jumps to mind with a couple at-bats in particular where he just did not look good at all. And, you know, I think there was one a couple days earlier where it was 3-0 and he swung at pitches outside the zone and ended up flying out when he would have been given a walk. I believe it was three pitches outside the zone. Like, I think there were six pitches all outside the zone. He didn't swing at the first three and he swung at the next three and he ended up getting into an out. This is a huge problem because the other way this is burning them is that he's right there in the middle of the lineup. And I don't know if they're just cursed with what they put in their number four spot. Over the last 2 years, I feel like they just have not been able to find somebody to consistently stay there and produce there. You know, you've got the Rowdy Tellez injury. Owen Miller was there for a time this year. Willie just does not seem to be able to produce here. And we could talk about lineup, and lineup is often debated about how important it is, and it can be really overrated really quickly. It doesn't feel like, though, they can afford to keep Willy Adames this high up that he should drop down. But again, it's not like there are alternatives coming out of their ears. So when you see Willie, he's still solid defensively. What are you thinking? Because I've gone from they got to extend him to, is Willy Adames part of the future, like, at all? It's been a really rapid decline here in what I think his future is, and where, like, maybe 2021 was just a total outlier and he's just like an average to below average shortstop overall. I don't know what to make of it. So tell me what you're thinking about Willy.
Yeah, outside of maybe the outfield picture this offseason, I think that's the biggest question facing the Brewers. I don't think Corbin Burnes is much of a question at this point. I might be wrong to say, but
No, he's getting traded.
Like it just feels like that's probably what happens. It could be wrong, but I think I don't know. Like, it's not as much of a dilemma. You know, you shop him, you get the offer, you trade him. Whereas with Adames, it's tricky because you have a play. This track record of producing at a good clip at a position where offense is at a premium and where these guys have gotten paid a lot of money. But now suddenly not only has Willy Adames stopped producing, but the shortstops also that got a lot of money have stopped producing. So I wonder if teams are going to see this, you know, these contracts that have been given out to all these shortstops and go, all of a sudden, like, not only because of your performance, Willy Adames, but because of the market and like what the returns have been on these guys like Trey Turner, Javi Baez, Carlos Correa, like, we are not going to give you that kind of money. So more than justifiable, I think, for the Brewers to bring him back on the last year of arbitration. Like, the track record shows he probably will be better next year. It's just rough right now. And I don't know how to, you know, like, there's no magic button to hit to fix it, then he's got to work his way out of it and hit his way out of it. And benching definitely is not in play here. Maybe a day off might help. But Willy Adames is a guy who is at his best when he is playing every day. So it's a tricky spot. The batting order thing, like, he should probably not be hitting cleanup right now. I can't get too super worked up about that. It's sort of like the Winker hitting second thing. Like, right. Sure, there were better or Winker hitting cleanup or whatever. Winker hitting cleanup for sure. Yeah, that was the question mark. But like, historically, he's your power bat. He still leads the team in homers, and you don't have like another real option for there if you want to go Yelich Contreras 1-2. So,
yeah,
it's just been hard to watch these at bats from him in the second half. Pretty much a lot of it is not really competitive.
Yeah, it looked like he might be turning a corner in early July, and we just have not seen that sustained lately. But you're right. I mean, they can have Terang play shortstop. You know, they'd be covered there. I'm sure they could figure out what to do at second base in that situation, but Willy Adames has to hit. Like, there isn't a good plan B there. There isn't an alternative. Willy Adames has to hit, you know, and if not him, then you put him ninth, let him play shortstop, and other guys have to hit that haven't hit. So this is their team. Like, we're past trade deadline. It's just got to be them. It's just got to be these guys. Real quickly, one last thought. Colin Ray, Julio Teheran, both now out of the rotation. Teheran is hurt. Colin Ray optioned back to AAA. Do you think, Kurt, that either one of those gentlemen pitches for the Brewers again this year?
I think Colin Ray makes a start.
Okay. They are 14-16, the Brewers are, in starts made by those two guys. 30 starts between them. I am sure the Brewers did not want 30 starts. Julio Teheran wasn't even in the organization at the beginning of the year. I'm sure they didn't expect that. I think you could do worse.
Probably not. Yeah, you could do worse than that. But you could – I guess you can't super nitpicky with depth starters. I would prefer to see a Robert Gasser start over either of those rest of the year. Like, I don't know. Might not be the greatest idea player developmentally wise. Like, hey, here you go. Major league debut. Here are the Wolves. You're in a playoff race. See what happens. But also, just do it. He's your best arm out of those guys right now. He's pitching well at AAA.
Yeah. Seems like they did something similar with Ethan Small with very bad results last year.
Situation. That was a little different. They like didn't have any depth. They needed a guy. Okay. He still was their top pitching prospect at the time.
Yeah. All right. Let's move into some more granular details from the week. It's three up, three down. Easy as one, two, three. Kurt, what tattoos do you have, Kurt? Do you have any fun tattoos?
I have no tattoos.
Oh, come on, Kurt. You've got to have something.
I have no tattoos. Do you have tattoos?
Of course not, Kurt. My body is a temple.
I was going to say, you have this.
No. But Bryce Terang has tattoos. He's got some colorful ones, actually. He's got quite the assortment of tattoos. One of them on his left arm shows him standing with his dad, who is a former big leaguer himself, wearing number one. Bryce Terang is wearing number two in this visual. And it turns out that number two became available when Luis Urias was traded. The aforementioned Luis Urias was traded to Boston, previously wearing number two. And Bryce Terang then changed his number from 0 to 2. And in his first game wearing number two, he clubbed a home run to right field, having a very good game. We're seeing some signs offensively out of Bryce Terang. It's not consistent. I wouldn't necessarily say you relying on his bat per se, but he's coming around a little bit, and he has hit some tanks for a little guy who, you know, isn't going to ever be known for his power. He has hit some bombs this year, and there was certainly one that he hit on Thursday night against Pittsburgh. That was part of that 14-1 rout. And the tattoo is now accurate. He is wearing the jersey number two, and I'm guessing that's how he'll spend the rest of his big league career. So pretty cool moment. Art imitating life, life imitating art. I'm not sure what we call that, but that was definitely one of the bright spots from that big game on Thursday night.
Yeah, sucks to suck if you bought a Bryce Terang zero jersey.
Yeah, it's a collector's item. It's
they
cool.
need to get some refunds. Yeah, but that is a collector's item. Yeah. Wade Miley returned this week. The other
that's right.
The other starter that made a return.
We haven't said his name once. List. What's wrong with us?
Well, there a lot of some other things happened, and some other players played bad. So yeah, he went 4 innings in Washington. It was a pretty much a Wade Miley start. Like, I don't know if there's a ton to break down here about Wade Miley. Like, you know what you're going to get from him if he's healthy. That's the big question. Like, the Brewers could really, really. I'm going to say the Brewers need him to be healthy the last 2 months. I don't think you can be giving starts these final 2 months to any more of your depth guys. Like you said, 30 starts between them. They have filled that role. And now it's time for these guys who are, you know, supposed to be starting to start games. So that'll be big if he can stay healthy.
I don't know if there's an intangible value to just having things settled, but they're finally now back to where they were at the start of the year, having that rotation of Burns, Woodruff, Peralta, Miley. Right now it's Hauser at number five. I don't know
instead
if that'll
of Lauer.
Change. Yeah, instead of Lauer.
Yeah.
But Eric Lauer, by the way, now pitching at Triple A and doing okay in spurts. But there might be just over the next few weeks just a settling factor, and maybe that gets guys, you know, it relaxes the offense a little bit knowing that you don't, you know, you're not going to have an adventure every third and fourth day because these guys are out there consistently. I don't know if that's true. That's you know, that's a vibe thing, but you never know. It feels like they're finally in a good place with the starting pitching, and maybe that trickles down. Okay, another fun moment from Thursday night. That broadcast was on Fox, the 14-1 win for the Brewers over the Pirates. One of the Fox announcers, Adam Amin, you've probably heard him in a number of places. He called, for example, Arike Ogunbowale's buzzer beaters in the NCAA women's basketball tournament a few years ago. He's done a lot with ESPN. He's now with Fox. He does a lot of a lot of Chicago Cubs stuff, I think. But forget all that, because most importantly, he went to Valparaiso University, which happens to be my alma mater. He worked at
Crusaders.
They were the Crusaders, and now the Beacons. So please update your files accordingly. 94.5, the Source, WVUR. It wasn't 94.5, 95.1. Oh my gosh, it's been 2 decades. So I'm forgiven here. But it is WVUR, the radio station. That is where I cut my teeth a little bit to learn some of the finer points of broadcast. Adam Amin came after me. He parlayed that into an incredible career. So big fan of Adam Amin's. But anyway, Adam put a graphic up during the game because he had also called Sal Frelick's debut that Saturday, a couple Saturdays ago, where Sal, of course, went 3-for-3, had the huge catches and all that, and the game-winning sacrifice fly. Sal Frelick started out hot this Thursday night as well and had, like, he was basically 5-for-5 with Adam Amin in the building watching. So they flashed that graphic up on the screen. Like, Sal Frelick is perfect. And on the very next pitch, maybe there was a second pitch, but it was very close thereafter. Sal Frelick hits his second career home run to add to his great night. So Adam and Sal Frelick are both, you know, short heroes. Both of them not what you'd call tall, but definitely
short kings.
That is the term I was looking for. Short kings and sharing a moment. That was pretty fun. Sal Frelick, of course, he and Terang both had huge games that night. So good showing for him as well.
How tall are you?
I'm very average. I'm 5'9 and a half. I am perfectly average American male.
Oh, then you can't call Sal Frelick a short king.
Oh, I'm sure he's taller than me, right? Is he not?
He is 5'10.
Oh, yeah, dude. I am. This is not a comparison to, like, actual humans. It's in comparison to, I think Adam Amin is shorter than me. I'm a short, I'm useless. I'm a big tubbo useless. Not the comparison point at all.
On that note, that's tubbo useless.
Did I throw off your train of thought?
The Kembe Matubbo useless.
Matubbo useless. I had not thought of that term before.
Sorry,
I don't know where that came from.
In my head. That's why I was laughing and I had to say it. I'm sorry.
I mean, it's true. I can't even play slow pitch softball anymore. I'm a big tubbo useless.
Blake Perkins tagged up from first base.
He lost his shirt.
That was like, I know he hit the walk-off hit later on.
Yeah.
But the tag from first I wanted to talk about because that was
holy irresponsible.
Daring, ballsy play.
Yeah, irresponsible.
The ball barely made the warning track. Like, did it make the – I think it got to the warning track.
Yeah.
But like
– But in right field.
Yeah, in right field. And not even like in the corner, in the gap, like straight away right field. And he tagged and he was safe. It ended up being a huge play because without advancing to second base, he's not scoring in that inning and the Brewers don't win the game. So RIP Blake Perkins game jersey from that day, but his base running theatrics live on.
Yeah, because he scores, on, like you said, on Sal Frelick's hit to tie the game. Just really pretty crazy stuff that he decided to go for it. And then, of course, he hits the game-winning hit the following inning. The Blake Perkins game probably will come up later in the year. That was a really needed win. And it turns out, because they ended up splitting the series, it would have been a disaster, I think, if they lost that game. To have lost 3 of 4 at home against Pittsburgh, right after 2 of 3 against Washington. I mean, that's a really dark situation that we're talking about. And so this game rescued them to some degree. We'll see if they can build on that a little bit. Certainly Sunday was not a good sign, but that was something else. All right, my third and final, Tom Hamilton. Tom Hamilton is not a name you may not know him, but he is.
Well, you know him now, probably.
Well, you may know him now. He's from Waterloo, Wisconsin, Waterloo High School, and so grew up, you know, listening to Bucks, Brewers games. He's got tons of Wisconsin in his background, but for an eternity, he's been doing radio for the Cleveland Guardians, Cleveland Indians, now the Cleveland Guardians, and he had quite the moment over the weekend when a brawl broke out between the Guardians and the White Sox. Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez, getting into a little bit of a tete-a-tete. They throw their mitts up. They throw their dukes up. They start throwing punches. Tim Anderson goes down. And Tom Hamilton on the call in real time, calling it like a prize fighter fight. Down goes Anderson. Down goes Anderson. That thing has gone super, super viral. And it's not something, I guess, that's super funny because it is dudes throwing punches at each other on the field. But it's also
It's funny.
It's a good time. And so Tom Hamilton feeling it in the moment. Now I saw The Athletic talk to him about the story, you know, about his call and everything. But always fun when long ago Wisconsinites are in the news and going viral. And he's about as good as it gets in Major League Baseball. He's a very decorated, a storied voice for the Cleveland Guardians, and it was very funny. And you know what? I mean, I should write about that at jsonline.com. Go, you know, just do a little blurb about one of Wisconsin's favorite sons.
I believe his brother is the head coach at Sun Prairie Baseball.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Rob Hamilton.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. You're bringing the knowledge, man. Powerhouse.
Yes. Baseball program there.
I would have never made that connection.
I don't want to guarantee that that's correct,
well,
but
we'll
I think
we'll
it
look
is.
Into it.
I think it is. Yeah, so I'll cap things off here. Like we've briefly referenced it, but we have to just like at least talk a little bit more about that loss on Wednesday. It was quite bad. Just a series of badness. There was multiple spots where the Brewers needed to tack on. They did not. Like honestly, that might stand out more from that game for me. Just the offense's ineptitude in some spots where you just gotta like hit a fly ball or you know something. But also like that ninth inning could not have gone worse for Devin Williams, and it feels like there's been, out of his blown saves, a lot of them have been like this.
Yeah,
not the Twins one, but not even all the blown saves, but some, like when he gets in trouble this year, it's been similar. Like maybe there's a bad walk in there. But there's multiple bloop hits. There's an error. In this case, there was 2 errors. He was found himself in a terrible position, but if Andrew Monasterio makes a throw, they might, I don't remember who's hitting, they might get a double play there. And all of a sudden, you just need a strikeout. Even with one out with his strikeout stuff, like or he might be out of the inning. So I don't know if that was the worst loss of the year. I cannot rattle them all off the top of my head. I probably could last year, but not this year. But it has to be up there.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it calls to mind the 2019 wildcard game where it wasn't a walk-off, but the 8th inning collapsed because of a series of just random things. And we brought them up earlier already, but it just really took the stars aligning. And Williams creating soft contact, getting ahead in counts, 0-2. I mean, Alex Call was down 0-2, and then he fights off a couple and puts a ball in play to Andrew Monasterio, who throws insanely wide. You know, Andrew Monasterio's been pretty dang good defensively. He just throws it wide. William Contreras can't come up with it. I feel like, I don't remember if it was Contreras or that might have been Caratini even. But, I mean, normally I feel like the catcher probably even makes that play, and nobody's behind him, and an extra run scores. Like, it's just a lot had to go wrong there. It was really, really weird. Truly a rough one. A couple things we could have talked about in 3 up, 3 down. Freddie Peralta had another rough inning, but rallied in Washington and had a really good start out of it. So maybe not really good, but quality. So that's encouraging, although I still think Freddie giving up the beginning. That's really been tough for them to overcome this year and be, you know, low key kind of one of the things standing in their way right now. And then also just to mention, you know, Josh Hader. I don't know if people are seeing this with the way that Josh Hader is used in San Diego. It's similar. It's exactly what was happening in Milwaukee, in that he just does not come out before the ninth inning. And it really burned San Diego in a game this week where they had a tough spot against a left-hander in the eighth inning, two outs in the eighth. San Diego elected not to bring him in. They just don't bring him in that spot. And then they ended up losing the game. It ended up turning into, I think, a five-run rally. I want to say that was against the Dodgers. So it's a similar thing, and you kind of have to consider that. That's all part of the Josh Hader trade that we can revisit, you know, every so often, and we have. That he was used in a very specific way, whether that was his insistence or that's just the agreement that came with the team. But it sure feels like that is something that Josh Hader prefers, and that has limited what they could do. Devin Williams doesn't work like that. Devin Williams can come in. He came in, you know, in a tie game situation over the weekend in a game that they ended up winning over the Pittsburgh Pirates. So it's a different bullpen when Josh Hader is gone, and I think it's something to think about, because the Padres have been burned now a few times over the last year and a half, or I think it's just a full year at this point, because of how they use them. Okay, let's go back in time a little bit, Kurt. It's Remember When. All right, we're thinking about brawls. Since I brought up the big one over the weekend here between Cleveland and Chicago. And we're actually, this was something I was going to use anyway before, just because I happened to be watching MLB Network. And Harold Reynolds was talking, they were talking about brawls for some reason. Again, this is before the White Sox Guardians dust up. So it's sort of like a, I don't know, maybe it was prescient or something. He talked about one that the Seattle Mariners got into in 1990 against the Milwaukee Brewers. And his point was like, this thing just kept going and going and going. It was like a 20-minute delay when both benches cleared in July of 1990. So what happened was, it was bottom of the eighth. Bob Sebra, who I think played in 10 games for the Brewers, was a name I had literally never considered before. He hits Tracy Jones following a home run by Jeffrey Leonard, former Brewer, Jeffrey Leonard, and a bloop double by Edgar Martinez. He decides now is the time to hit a guy, and everybody goes crazy. The home plate umpire, John Schulock, said, I've been in the game for 17 years, never seen a fight like that in my life. Usually teams want to break things up. Nobody wanted to break this up for some reason. John Schulock actually goes on to basically intimate that while there was a Mariners coach that was trying, I think Rusty Coutts was trying to break things up, he said, well, a couple coaches on the other team were just trying to extend it, basically. Tom Treblehorn gets really upset about that, by the way, the Brewers manager at the time. He's like, he hated the insinuation that the Brewers were somehow involved here. Treblehorn's uniform gets completely ripped open, much like Blake Perkins this week. So he's bleeding from his forehead when he's talking to reporters after the game. Officers from the King County Police Department and Seattle Police Department are lining the field here. Everybody gets ejected. Surhoff, Gary Sheffield, Mike Felder for the Brewers, along with Sebra. The Mariners lose Jones, Tracy Jones, Jeff Schaefer, Gene Harris, Randy Johnson, who was not pitching. I would not want to be in a fight with that man on the field. I think Schulock said something to the effect of, a couple coaches on the other team didn't look like they were trying to break things up. Treblehorn said, I will not give that credence or dignify it by a response. You know, he says, that Sebra wasn't trying to intentionally hit the guy. Sebra completely disagrees with that and says, yeah, I was trying to hit him. I absolutely was. Like, he said it point blank. I tried to hit him. I hit him. And so that was all part of it as well. Again, he pitched for 10 games. He was gone very quickly. Seattle wins that game 6-2. Higuera gets hit around a little bit. That's kind of the beginning of the end for Teddy Higuera. He had a 1.78 ERA coming into that game through the first 10 starts of the year, and then it was 4.72 the rest of the way. Didn't have a zero-run start after that, so that's kind of the beginning of the end with Higuera. But a wild brawl that I personally don't remember. There's good one with Oakland, a good one with the Yankees that I think a lot of people remember in Brewers history. Didn't remember this one, but in a week where a brawl is one of the top headlines, that's a fun one to revisit. Fun in quotes, but still an interesting one to revisit. All right, Kurt, we are through all the good stuff. Let's tear this down with your take of the week. It is Kurt Blanche.
Ryan Braun sends it from off center and deep. Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Ryan Braun. He just hit a walk-off home.
I did not know you were going to go on the fight scene there.
Yeah, I like a good fight. I'm not going to lie to you. I like a good fight.
Well, that's interesting, because I was pondering a few options here. And one of them, one of my take of the weeks was, we need more fights in baseball. And I'm deciding right now on the fly if I want to roll with that, and I think I'm going to.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to do this. We need more fights in baseball. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but and there's no one usually gets like that hurt.
I mean, I would agree right? with that because like, most of the time it's not a real fight. It's the bullpen coming out to walk out and observe.
Yeah, even when there are real fights, like nothing wrong with a little dust up, and you know, like I'm not talking about like the MLB fights we have now where the bench is clear and people stand there and you get held back. No, like some Tim Anderson, Jose Ramirez fights. That is good for the game of baseball.
it draws eyes
to it. I don't know. If I had been at that game and it was my first game, I would be a forever fan of baseball. Like, are you serious? They were just punching each other on the field. Like, they're good. Fights are good for hockey. I feel like they're even more dangerous in hockey. I think we need to let more guys go at it. Currently, we have people throwing spheroids at other guys' bodies at like 100 miles an hour on purpose when they're mad at them.
Not Craig Council's teams.
No, this is true. I don't think the Brewers generally do any retribution. I guess Miles Michaelis was like 95. So, you know, like still, my point being, that's far more dangerous than a couple of guys, you know, getting into a little bit of fisticuffs, right? Maybe. Probably both kind of actually dangerous, but entertaining to see, and I want more of it.
I don't need more fights. I mean, I find them kind of amusing, but like, I don't.
Well, yeah, okay. At a point, it would become like if it became hockey, that'd be too much. But like, a good fight a year would do wonders, I think. Maybe a couple good fights a year.
I mean, it would spice things up for sure. I think, I don't know. I feel like more guys get hurt in walk-offs than fights, so. I hear what you're saying. It's probably not as lethal to the key players on the team. I just wouldn't want, you know, you watch the footage of this and Dave Parker, 1990 Dave Parker for the Brewers is on the loose, like, you know, coming out charging at people, pointing fingers. And I'm just like, do you want that as a team? You don't want that.
Yes.
You don't want that.
Yes, I
People are going to die.
I want to. No. It won't ever be that. It couldn't be that bad, right?
No.
Right? I think we need some more
I would
fights.
Hate to be the team that finds out. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know how you make it happen more. Like, it's just got to be, because it has to be last night, which was, it was raw and real. And all of a sudden, in the moment, like, they're like, oh, we're going to fight. And then they actually fought. That was the cool part to me. So many times guys are like, we're going to fight. And then they're like, wait, actually, no, this guy's going to hold me back, which is what I would do. But like, no, you just go do it. Go fight.
Yeah.
You are an athlete. I am not.
All right. Last one before I go into my interview with Mark Cann, I want to ask you something real quick. Tyler Black is a AAA now. I set the over-under at 14 days before he's on the big league roster. He doesn't need a position. He's just too good a hitter to. I mean, he's a guy who understands the zone. He's not going to crush a bunch of home runs, but feel like he's got to be on this Brewers team at some point. Over and under 14 days, where would you go if I set that the bar?
It's the over, and I'm going to say it's Rowdy Insurance.
Oh, okay. So you don't think he ends up coming up this year?
Oh, I think very well he might end up be here for, like, if it was, is he here or not? I would lean yes.
Okay.
But right. 14 days seems... And I'm the guy who says he doesn't need to be at AAA, but like, I think that seems a little short given Rowdy's coming back.
Yeah, well, that's what's in my head. Like, I feel like putting him at AAA is almost like a storage system. Like, just getting him a few extra at-bats against big leaguers, basically, and wait, biding your time until you're ready for him to come back. You know, there's a spot for him on the big league team, but you're right. If they're going to put him at AAA at all, they're probably not just going to do it for 2 weeks. You're probably right about that. All right, that's going to do it, Kurt. Unless you have any last thoughts, we're going to send you away and move into my interview with Mark Canna. That's it, right?
One last thought. I'm a lover. I'm not a fighter.
Okay.
I also want to get that on the record.
Okay.
Love wins.
Specifically Jordan Love, quarterback.
Jordan Love. Oh, Jordan Love deep balls to Christian Watson. Those also win.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, here now is my interview with Mark Canha, newest member of the Milwaukee Brewers. Well, one of the newest, because I believe Andrew Chafin came after him in terms of arriving on the roster. But you get to know him a little bit. He's a foodie, so we talk a little bit about the foodie scene in Milwaukee, what he learned from Daniel Vogelbach. Daniel Vogelbach gave him some suggestions, and so I had to know what those were. And a couple other things about sort of his background. He's a Bay Area guy who obviously got a chance to play for the Oakland Athletics for quite some time. So here's my interview. Thank you for tuning in to Microbrew this week. We will chat with you again next week. Bye-bye, everybody. My guest is Mark Canha, new outfielder for the Milwaukee Brewers. Mark, we're going to go back to the beginning. You are a San Jose guy. I'm kind of curious, just San Jose in general, as baseball fans growing up, are you an Oakland A's guy? Are you a San Francisco Giants guy? How does the fandom work in San Jose?
It's a mixed bag, but I think I grew up a Giants fan, and going to Giants games probably more often than A's games.
Okay.
But, I was a Giants fan. Barry Bonds and was my guy, and you know, Jeff Kent and those guys, and that's how it was. I had friends that were A's fans, and ironically I ended up playing for the A's
team,
and I had to begrudgingly answer that way when I in front of the A's fans in my first fan fest, and that's how it goes.
So are you familiar with the Moneyball concept growing up? Even though, I mean, you're a Giants guy, but that's about the time you're in, like, your early teenage years, right?
Yeah. The first time I didn't really know what Moneyball was growing up.
Sure.
But I remember as a kid one day, I used to play hockey, and we would travel a lot, and my dad would drive me places to play hockey games. And remember he had an audio CD of the Moneyball, an audio book of the book. So we listened to that one day, and I remember thinking it was really interesting.
Yeah.
And then the movie came out, and my wife and I love the movie. We're obsessed with it.
That's awesome. You went to, is it Bellarmine? Is that
Bellarmine?
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think there are two other big leaguers on that team that you were on that got to the big leagues before you. Is that right?
Eric Goodell and Tommy Medica, I believe, would be the two big leaguers I played with. And then
you must have been, you know, a good team.
Yeah, we were pretty good.
That's crazy.
It was good school, good athletics program. And Kevin Franzen, another big leaguer, played there. And Pat Burrell as well.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And Eric Thames?
Is he Eric Thames. Eric Thames.
Do you have any Eric Thames stories? He's very beloved here. I know he's ahead of you a little bit, but...
He was a senior my freshman year, so
okay.
I don't have any stories. I don't know him well. We crossed paths in the big leagues, and that was really cool, and stuff like that. But no good stories. I don't know him personally very well.
So you come up with the Marlins in the minor league system, and then you're picked by the Rockies in the Rule 5 draft, traded right away to the A's, traded back home. How did Rule 5 work for you? Most Rule 5 guys, I think, just kind of barely hang on the big league roster.
Mm-hmm.
But then you came in, I know you had a great spring training. You had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, you weren't daunted by the possibility that if you get sent back down, you're going to go back to your previous organization.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it would have been Colorado at that point, so it would have been I don't even know how that would work. But how did that work for you? How did you engage with the Rule 5 concept that year?
It was my opportunity, my shot to kind of make the big leagues. And I just didn't really put so much pressure on myself to do anything except just be myself and have fun and kind of take it all in and kind of treat it like, you know, every minute could be your last minute. So I tried to just give it everything I had and enjoy the ride. And that's kind of been my approach my entire career ever since. It's kind of been like a mantra.
The playoff moment that sticks out is this catch you have in left field. And I believe this is the 2020 year where everything is strange and there are not fans. And I might even be mixing up my years a little bit. I know you played in the 2020 playoffs as well. Is that something you think about? I know it was compared to the Joe Rudy catch from the World Series back in, I don't know which 70s year that is. But what sticks out about that playoff run for you, the 2020 playoffs in general maybe?
I think... if I'm not mistaken, that was a win-or-go-home game.
That series definitely went the distance, yeah.
It was kind of a do-or-die play, and it was a play where I you know, kind of one of those plays where you're up against a wall and it's a big wall in Oakland and you're judging yeah. whether or not to go for it or play it off the wall. And we had a couple run lead at the time and I said, I'm going to go protect this lead and try and, you know, protect this lead. And I went for it and made a nice play on the ball.
Do you engage at all with what's going on in Oakland with the move to Vegas? I mean, you were with them for so many years. Do you pay attention to that? Is it depressing? I mean, I don't know how you look at it.
Well, I get asked about it a lot.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm keeping an eye on it, and sure, it's a story sure. that's across baseball is a thing that, you know, is happening, and it's just something that I look at and I, you know. They've been talking about it for a long time.
Yeah.
It's been a story for a long time. I still can never understand where they're at in the process because it's yeah. just a lot of stories about politics and how it gets pushed through local government and such. And,
yeah.
and it's something that for me is hard to follow because it's hard to understand what exactly is going on. But they've been, ever since I was a kid, I remember them talking
sure.
about moving the team to Oakland or out of Oakland
somewhere
else
right.
and building the new stadium and all this stuff. So, you know, I feel bad for the fans and I really love the fans there and they were so great to me. And I feel bad that if the team does end up moving out of Oakland, you know, it's going to be a sad thing for those fans.
My understanding is Canna is the pronunciation of your name, but Kanya is technically the correct one. I'm interested in just the willingness to sort of let Canna stand, even though there's maybe a better way to say it. So what's the story there?
Yeah, it's a Portuguese name, so technically in Portuguese you would pronounce it Kanya.
Sure.
I'm like third or fourth, probably fourth generation American at this point, so I don't really... It's been Canna my whole life.
Sure.
I don't know why my parents told me that that was our last name growing up, so it felt disingenuous to kind of go back to Kanya.
Sure.
After I grew up saying my name one way my whole life, so
yeah.
It was a joke of last year on Sunday Night Baseball or something. They brought it up and it became kind of a thing to talk
yeah.
about.
But, when you were mic'd up at the game, it was a
yeah,
very good interview.
But my wife was like, you know, we got kids now, and you know what? We can't confuse the kids. So just we got to nip that in the bud, and it's Canna. Okay,
yeah.
we're rolling with Canna.
Okay, so everyone kind of, who knows enough about you knows that you're a foodie. You've got an Instagram account where you're posting a lot of pictures. I know you're into just the food scenes in general. I imagine you haven't had time to check out anything in Milwaukee, but you had mentioned that Daniel Vogelbach gave you suggestions, another very beloved former Brewer player.
Yeah.
I am dying to know if you remember any of the suggestions that Daniel Vogelbach threw your way that you were eager to try out.
He told me about carnivore.
Oh, very good. Okay.
That was his spot, I guess.
Sure.
I have been to a couple of great restaurants in Milwaukee already. One
oh, wow.
earlier this year when we came with the Mets,
yeah.
I went to Good Kind.
Okay.
Which I enjoyed very much. And last night, we got in early enough to grab a meal. So I went out and I went to Odd Duck.
Okay, very good.
And Odd Duck was, I was very impressed.
All right,
really
man.
Good food there.
All right.
Yeah.
The State Fair is in town. I don't know if your foodieism extends to cheese curds and sample platters. It's a different vibe
yeah.
entirely. But
we got to get some cheese curds at some point. That's
yeah.
for sure. I know that.
All right. Thank you very much. Really appreciate your help.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. but don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.